Hello, I'm David Pride. This is number 0180, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0180. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Dr. Roger Freeman, the man behind Infectious Wearables, a line of silk ties and scarves that feature patterns of infectious diseases. They're absolutely gorgeous, as I can attest to since I actually own one, but the idea of them on paper doesn't necessarily sound appealing.
When people ask what it is that I do now that I left the profession of dentistry some time ago, and I tell them, well, you know, we've developed this little internet business, and then I describe what it is we do, I sometimes get a look that's like no one home. What is it that you do again? Until they see the product, it's a hard connection for them to make.
Miriam Slosberg is the author of The Secret to Having High Social Media Rankings. She says it's important to have a high clout score. Why is that?
Social media is so prevalent now that you are expected to know it inside out. And if you are in careers such as anything to do with marketing, or if you're an author, coach, if you work in PR, if you own your own business, and if you're just dealing with the public professionally, you have to use social media correctly, and you have to be influential in your own field and engage with others. And if others really care about you, they'll engage with you, right? And that's what it shows. So this is why it is recommended to have a high score.
Bob Beyer is the author of Identity Theft Prevention for the College Student. On your social media, you should never make your birth date public.
When you share where and when you were born, anyone can get a copy of your birth certificate. With that birth certificate, they can obtain a duplicate Social Security card. With the Social Security card, they can obtain a driver's license. With the license, a passport. With the passport, anyone can travel anywhere and be you as much as they want.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0180 is comic David Pride. And David was also the writer on another show that I do, which is on SiriusXM, it's Just for Laughs radio show. And he has written that show for several years now. He's a very funny man. As a matter of fact, you can check out his own website and see some of his clips, some of his stand-up, and find out more about when he'll be performing next. And you'll find his website by going to the What's On page for this show, and you'll find the link. And thank you very much, David, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. A program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? While investigating a fatal car accident in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, an officer on the scene suddenly heard people yelling and turned around to see a car driving past the patrol cars and crime scene tape. The driver ignored several officers who tried to stop her, but eventually stopped in the middle of the accident scene. Tomasini Hariaro, age 25, opened her car door, and officers say they smelled alcohol on her breath. When they asked her if she'd been drinking, she said, no. When asked why she drove onto the scene, she allegedly said she was just following the car in front of her, but officers noted no other cars were driving through. Police arrested her on charges of DUI, driving without a driver's license. They always are driving without a driver's license. Have you noticed that? And obstruction. She told police she couldn't go to jail because she had to make a court appearance in the morning. Would you like to know what she was making that court appearance for? DUI. Yeah. I'm sure it wasn't until she got to jail that she learned there wasn't a two-for-one special. Officials at Mount Carmel, Pennsylvania Area Elementary School have suspended a student for making terroristic threats after threatening another student with a gun. Well, it's not a real gun. It's a pink Hello Kitty bubble gun that shoots out soap bubbles. And it wasn't even at school, but rather at a bus stop on the way to school. And the student is a 5-year-old girl, and she didn't even have the toy with her. It's just bubbles. It can't harm anyone, said an attorney the family has retained. Yes, they got a lawyer. It's not hard and wouldn't puncture anyone or harm anyone in any way. When school officials found out about the threat, and I'm doing air quotes here, they questioned the girl for 3 hours without notifying her parents. A psychologist examined the girl and says she's no danger to anyone, but school officials only budged a little. They reduced the suspension from 10 days to 4 days. The girl is 5. The family says they may sue the school district. Oh, Lord, I hope they do. That's a threat that ought to make them dissolve into a pile of bubbles themselves. This is just another case of zero tolerance gone completely mad. Completely mad. Okay, a 15-year-old girl brought a friend home. The girl made her parents a milkshake, and after drinking a little of it, they felt funny and passed out. When they woke up in the morning, they called police. They felt like they had been drugged, said Lieutenant Lon Milka. The milkshakes tasted strange. Police say the 16-year-old friend had supplied sleeping pills to spike the drink. The motive? The parents always turn off the wireless internet at 10 p.m., and the girls wanted to stay online later. The unnamed girls were arrested, but police left the specific charges up to the district attorney. And what website was so important? Milka didn't know. For our investigation, that wasn't as important as the drugging. Don't you think the sites they were checking out might lead to some clues? Perhaps they were looking at sites on how to drug parents. Anyway. Time for one more story here on the Stuff File News before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We go to Colombia for our next story. Colombian authorities say 3 men who burgled a convenience store were forced to abandon their loot when the getaway donkey alerted police with his braying. Police say the men stole the donkey, 10-year-old Xavi, and about 12 hours later attempted to have him carry away the merchandise that they took from Fabio Orozco's convenience store in the town of Juan de Acosta. Now, investigators said police officers heard the donkey's hee-haws around 2 a.m., and the thieves were forced to leave the animal and the loot, which included rum, oil, rice, tuna, and sardines, behind. Police recovered the donkey and the stolen goods, but the thieves were able to escape on foot. The donkey was returned to its owner. You know, I guess the moral of this story is, when committing a crime, you can't depend on a real ass for your getaway. Anyway, on to our first guest here on the Stuff File program. It was back in 1999 when we first talked to our next guest. Back then, Dr. Roger Freeman was just starting up his new line of infectious wear, silk and cotton garments featuring patterns as seen under a microscope, ties that depicted gonorrhea, malaria, the Black Plague, and herpes, just to name a few. The company is called Infectious Wearables, and Roger is on the line with us right now from California to talk about how the company has done all these years later. Hi, Roger.
Pleasure to speak with you, Peter.
Nice to have you on to talk with us once again. Like I said, it was quite a while we spoke to you. How is it going? I checked the website, which is iowearables.com. I see you're still in business, still doing well. So how's it going?
That's sort of a miracle, isn't it? Small business lasting that long. It's going well. It's been an interesting ride. When you first purchased one of our ties, we were in our infancy. I mean, we had just begun, and most of our materials were in infectious diseases because that's how it was started out early on with the previous developer and the CDC working in conjunction with each other. But we decided to change the emphasis and go to not only infectious disease, but things that we could talk about that were timely, in which our humor could be sort of infectious. And so we've developed into subjects such as climate change and neurons and things of that nature, which has a more universal appeal and interest. And it's been an interesting ride. We've been very successful, and I'm pretty excited that we've lasted this long.
Now, as you mentioned, I do indeed have one of your ties, and that's one of the reasons why I decided to call you again, because in my other life, I also work as a television news anchor and occasionally wear the tie that I purchased from Infectious Wearables. And I find it interesting, while wearing it on television, every once in a while I'll get an email from someone who is clearly in the medical profession, and they won't ask me what's on the tie. They just want me to confirm, is that Staphylococcus on your tie?
Well, you know, the images in the scientific community are pretty well known. So I get that all the time. And people, you know, when they email us and talk to us about their experiences, it's been really interesting over the years, the various experiences people have had and the feedback that they get. And that's what's been kind of exciting, Peter, is that people start to recognize it and they start talking about these things. I mean, we were at a charitable event with a bunch of lawyers not too long ago, a lot of lawyers. That was not really exciting for me. But three of them were wearing these ties because they had a connection to me. And they all started talking about the various issues on the tie. And really, that's very rewarding for us, to get people to be able to start talking about things over a subject that, how else would that subject come up in a group of lawyers at a charitable function?
The thing that's interesting about them is on paper, it doesn't necessarily sound like a great idea, but when you actually see the ties, they really are gorgeous.
Yeah, I know. And when people ask what it is that I do now that I left the profession of dentistry some time ago, and I tell them, well, you know, we developed this little internet business. We thought back in 99 that might be something to be worthwhile. And then I describe what it is we do. I sometimes get a look that's like no one home. What is it that you do again? They, until they see the product, it's a hard connection for them to make.
Now, as I mentioned, you have ties, you have silk and cotton garments, so you have ties and you have scarves. What sells more? Do the guys buy the ties, or do the guys wear the ties, or do women buy the scarves?
That's really an interesting question. You are an insightful guy, Peter. When we go to the meetings like at American Public Health or microbiology meetings, guys will buy ties for guys. Guys will stand there with their cell phones and call their significant others and ask them, what colors do they like? Meaning the guys that don't even know what colors they like. But guys will not buy scarves. Women will buy ties for their significant others, and they will buy scarves. So it's sort of a one-way thing. Guys don't buy scarves, but women will buy ties. In fact, I think the women buy more ties than the men.
Really?
They buy them for the men. Yeah, I think so.
What is the most, over the years, what has been the most popular? I know when I first talked to you back in 1999, I think you had a favorite. You liked the gonorrhea tie.
Well, you know, I'm glad your listeners understand what we're talking about here.
Yes.
Taken out of context, that's a little peculiar. But, you know, I do have some favorites in terms of design because I think they're clever. Right now, we're one of the most popular ones is the neurons design because it really is an image of neurons. And we're working at the moment with a group called the Facial Pain Association. They deal with a condition called trigeminal neuralgia, which is a very, very nasty condition. As it happens, my wife has it. But these neurons depict what axons and dendrites, what it actually looks like. And we sell those across the board because it's not necessarily an infectious disease. The design for climate change is very clever. It's got a polar bear on a little plank of ice. We've got West Nile. The images came directly from the Purdue department that did a lot of the Nobel Prize-winning research on West Nile. And that's been rewarding, too. We work with a lot of the scientists, across the world, really, on some of these designs. And we try to keep them as accurate as we can.
So the one for climate change, then, is that one of the first ones that you have that doesn't come from something that can be seen under a microscope?
That's true. It is. However, what it does have is it has a little graph on it, and I've forgotten the name of it. I'm ashamed to tell you the name of this graph. That shows the climate change over the last 100 years. It's very small, can't. You have to use a magnifying glass to see it. But it has that along with the polar bear. And, there's one other component that I can't remember. But it's pretty neat, if I do say so myself. And we did that also in conjunction with Nobel Prize-winning scientists.
What kind of media attention, I mean, like I said, we spoke to you 15 years ago, but what kind of media attention have you garnered through the years with infectious wearables?
Well, I'm not sure it was because of you or not, Peter, but People Magazine came to us and they did a couple pages on us. And we've been on all the morning shows and, you name it, we've been there. It's been kind of exciting because I never know where the next phone call is going to come from. And here you call me. We haven't, spoken in how many years? And you're still wearing the tie? I mean,
I love the tie. You know, the thing about it is,
pretty exciting for me.
The thing is, I like to wear ties that, to a certain degree, are conversation pieces. And but most of my ties that are conversation pieces are not necessarily this subtle. I mean, you have to be someone with a medical background to go, wait a minute, what is that on your tie? You know, and I don't go around saying to people, hey, guess what's on my tie. I wait till somebody makes mention of it, because usually it's somebody who's in the know.
Well, you know, one of our mantras is, quote unquote, start the conversation. And what you're alluding to here is exactly that. The conversation starts, gee, that's pretty, what is that? Well, it happens, that's the West Nile virus. Oh, West Nile, what is that? And we start talking about it, and why are you interested in it, and does it really look like that, and how'd you get the images? And I mean, that's interesting stuff.
Just tonight, I was talking to a niece of mine who lives in another city, and she actually happens to work in a medical clinic. I said, you know, you've got to get one of the scarves just to wear, just to see who mentions it first.
What profession is she in?
She's a receptionist at a medical clinic in Ottawa.
There'll be doctors or scientists or educators who will know what it is, that's for sure.
So
we've taken your staphylococcus to the next level, you see. When we did that one, it was just plain staphylococcus, but now I'm sure you've heard of MRSA.
Yes.
Which is methicillin-resistant staphylococcus. I mean, we've gone to a whole new generation for you. And
now,
that's what we do. We try to evolve the designs over the years.
I'm kind of curious, because like I said, I love the ties, and I'm sure the women love the scarves. I don't know if I'm willing to wear staphylococcus boxer shorts, though. How do they sell? Or any of the other?
Yeah. We pretty much sold out of them. The one that people liked the most, believe it or not, was the gonorrhea boxer shorts. Because people love to come up with comments about the shorts. They buy them for their significant others, both men and women. They love that. We pretty much sold out of all those shorts. We have a few sizes left. Because being a small business, you have to produce a gazillion of those things to make the economics work out. So while we had them, and we still have some sizes, people love them. But those are cotton. The neckties are all silk.
And I should again reiterate, they're also great. They're also great quality. Amazing stuff.
I think that they are. You know, I think that and I asked my wife this the other day, because we have a complaint department on our website. And I asked her, I said, how many times have we gotten complaints? She said, maybe five times. I said, are you kidding me? And five times in 14 years or something like that? The ties hold up. And you know what? If any tie wears out, we send another one.
Well,
not a big deal.
People can check out the website. It's iawearables.com. That's www.iawearables.com. And there's a whole slew of ties they can choose from and colors. Check them out. There's some really, really nice ones there. Sometimes it's hard to make a choice, but I'm sure that people out there looking at these things, they're going to want to buy them. Congratulations on lasting so long and coming up with something that's truly unique.
Peter, I really do appreciate the way you appreciate what we've done, and I appreciate your following up after all these years. It's nice for us. It's one of those success stories that we tell people that, you know, we had a customer from 1999. He called us up and wanted to know more about it. That's real nice, and I do appreciate it.
Roger Freeman, the man behind Infectious Wearables. Like I said, you have to check out their website to see the beautiful selection they have. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0180, and you'll find the links to their site. It's really cool, cool stuff.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about clout and social media rankings. Plus, we'll give you some tips to avoid identity theft, particularly if you're a college student. And of course, there is indeed an idiot of the day. Here on the Stuff File program, also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right back to the stuff, shall we? You know how airlines like to charge you for just about everything these days? Well, here's a totally unrelated story about a school, but it sounds like another airline pricing model. The Jiangdu District Kindergarten recognizes that providing a quality education requires supporting the child emotionally, as well as helping develop reading and other skills. And toward that end, it now requires teachers to hug each pupil twice a day, providing that their parents have paid for the monthly hugging fee, or the equivalent of about $12.80. An education agency investigation is underway, according to a December Shanghai Daily report, but one teacher defended the trial program as boosting a child's confidence and establishing a good mood for learning. Now, admittedly, I'm a hugger by nature, and therapists have determined that you really need about 8 hugs a day. And having said that, I don't charge, and going back to my original point, it sounds like a ludicrous idea that they would charge, much like, as I said, airlines that want to charge a fee for just about everything. Actually, when I think about it, airlines and banks. Those are the two. Anyway, a cleaning lady stole a train. Yeah, that's not a typo. I didn't make a mistake. That's what I said. A cleaning lady stole a train and drove it off the end of the tracks and smashed into a house in Sweden, injuring only herself. Now, it's not clear how the woman, who was around 20 years of age, got access to the key needed to start the train. She was taken to hospital with serious injuries, but the train was carrying no other passengers, as it was in the early hours and no one in the house was hurt. The cleaner drove the train at high speed, considerably higher than normal on that stretch, to where the rails end and crashed into a house, said Jesper Peterson, who is a spokesperson for Stockholm Public Transport. The train plowed past the end of the line and vaulted over a street separating the house from the depot, crashing through a balcony and into a downstairs room in an upscale suburb. Stockholm Public Transport and police are investigating how she gained access to the cabin and was able to drive the train. Well, she made it all the way to 20 years old, but you know, you got to think that as a child, she must have been a handful to babysit. Got to keep an eye on her at all times. Okay, on to a story from Barrie, Ontario. A man who took a bus trip from Montreal to Barrie, which is north of Toronto, to meet a woman he met online, called 911 after finding he'd been stood up. Police said the man said he was supposed to meet the woman he had been chatting with, and when he arrived at the city's downtown bus terminal, she was nowhere to be found. He became angry and called 911, wanting police to track down his missing date and find out why she stood him up. When he was reminded about the proper use of 911, the man became even angrier. The dispatcher suggested he find a place to stay for the night and cool off. Now, I don't know what reason the woman gave for standing him up, but clearly she was right. And authorities in Florida say they arrested a man accused of stealing 166 steel manhole covers and attempting to sell them as scrap. The Polk County Sheriff's Office said Christopher Fink, age 40, was arrested after the Toho Water Authority reported $22,000 worth of manhole covers missing in Poinciana, and Fink was caught attempting to sell the covers at local metal dealers. Fink was charged with felony counts of grand theft, dealing in stolen property, and giving false verification to a secondhand metal dealer. The sheriff's office said more charges are possible against Fink, who has been arrested 6 times since October 2011. So I guess what we're saying here is he's a career moron. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the Russian Federal Bailiff Service said pictures of persistent debtors will be placed on coasters in bars and restaurants in parts of Siberia. A spokeswoman for the service said the officials are hoping the pictures will be recognized by citizens who will report the culprits to authorities. We have already tested this practice when we put the pictures of debtors in the newspapers with explanations of their debts and asked local residents to report on the whereabouts of these wanted persons, the spokesperson said. People responded. They call us and help us. We hope that this experiment with beer coasters will bring positive results as well. The coasters will feature the suspect's picture and names, as well as a contact number for the bailiff service. Now, my only concern here is that with people drinking, you know, their vision might not be the best. This could lead to a few incorrect identifications. But hey, give them points for originality. I like it. Okay, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. If you have a Twitter and Facebook account and will be applying for a job at some point or want to build your business or personal brand, you need to know how to boost your clout score. Why? Well, we're about to find out. Miriam Slosberg is an expert on search engine optimization and social media, and she's the author of The Secret to Having High Social Media Rankings. She joins us on the line from Toronto. Hi, Miriam.
Hi, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Now, for those who don't even know what it is, first of all, explain what is a clout score.
Okay, well, firstly, let me explain what clout is. What it is, it's a company that's based in San Francisco. It was established in December of 2008, and it provides social media analytics to measure a user's influence across his or her social networks, especially Twitter, Facebook, Google+, LinkedIn, and Foursquare. So it measures not even so much the size of the person's network so much anymore, but more so the content that's created and how others in their network are responding to them and how well they're engaging with one another. So that's basically what it is in a nutshell. And the more engagement you receive and the more response you receive to what you put out, the higher your score is. And the score is It's a numerical value between 0 and 100, obviously 0 being the lowest and 100 being the highest, and the only one who has a score that's close to 100 right now is Barack Obama. Anything over, actually, a score of 40 is average, but if you are a business professional, you're going to want to have a score that is over 60.
And why is that?
Well, the fact of the matter is it shows that you see, okay, here's the thing. Social media is so prevalent now that you are expected to know it inside out. And if you are in careers such as anything to do with marketing, or if you're an author, coach, if you work in PR, if you own your own business, and if you're just dealing with the public professionally, you have to use social media correctly, and you have to be influential in your own field and engage with others. And if others really care about you, they'll engage with you, right? And that's what it shows. So this is why it is recommended to have a high score, but at the same time, don't try to win that score up by posting nonsense on your networks all the time, because what you put out there is also seen. So that's what I stress.
A score is also not static, correct? It does fluctuate.
It fluctuates, absolutely, because the thing is, if you like just stop doing any of your, any social media, like if your activity stops, then it's going to go down, right? But if you increase it, it'll go up. So just be sure to if you know, obviously you have to increase it, but don't try to game anything. Don't like manipulate it, because that's going to bite you back, basically.
Now, as I said in the introduction, it could have an effect if you're looking for a job.
Yeah.
Why are some people taking that so seriously in job applicants?
Well, it depends on the kind of job that you're looking for, but most jobs involve social media now. And the thing is, if you know how to use social media properly, then it's going to reflect on your clout score, and that's what they look at. That's not the only thing that's going to be the determining factor, but there was a story of somebody who had a marketing degree and also a lot of experience, and he was not hired because he had a low clout score. And that's the thing. If you are in any kind of marketing field, and if you're applying for some kind of position where you're dealing with the public professionally that involves social media, which most do, then they're looking at the clout score now.
Well, I guess I'll have to keep that in mind.
Yeah.
I mentioned in the introduction also your book, The Secret to Having High Social Media Rankings. Who exactly did you write this book for? Your primary audience.
Yes. Well, anyone, like I said, anyone that's in the marketing field, if they're business owners, if they're coaches, if they're musicians, if you're dealing with the public professionally, and if, where social media is involved, that's who it's for.
Now, I remember back in the day when the World Wide Web first got up and running, and people started getting websites and companies, there were some that were hesitant to get on the web because they didn't know what it was or what it could be used for. And there were others on the extreme side, the other extreme of the scale, who were jumping on the web but not knowing exactly what their purpose there was or how to use it. I would assume with social media and companies and business individuals, it's a similar situation today. There are those who aren't on it, who should be probably, and those who are on it but don't know how to use it or are not using it properly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And this is the kind of thing that I help people with. I help teach them how to use social media properly, I help them understand what engagement is, and I help them become truly influential in their field of expertise, right? Because there are ways to do that. I mean, like I said, the clout score is just a measurement. It's not the end all. You have to know how to use social media properly and how to utilize it.
So in your field, in your business, when you come across people using social media, what's one of the biggest mistakes that somebody in business makes using social media?
Over-promotion. I see a lot of it. A lot of over-promotion, and that is a no-no. That's a big turn-off. And also, I see, people cussing, that's another thing too, and that's a big no-no as well. Especially, I mean, as far as low-level accounts go, that doesn't matter because they're not using it for business. But, you know, you have to, and another thing too is that this is contrary to what, like, most social media experts say, but I don't believe that every Twitter account, like if it's a business Twitter account, or any Twitter account, yes, it has to be niche-related, but it doesn't, like every tweet that you put out should not be only in your niche. I'd say 80% of it should be. 20% of it can be retweets from, you know, anyone else who's you're following or who's following you that may be out of your niche. You know, like just make it personable, right? Because if you do everything in your niche, then you're just not going to come off as being personable.
One of the other things, speaking about Twitter, and the other business life that I have, we have people in our company who go around the country talking about how to use Twitter and social media as well.
Yeah.
And one of the things they mention is it's very important, and I want to get your thought on this. It's very important if you make a mistake on Twitter to correct the mistake, but own up to it. In other words, don't simply remove tweets.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, only 5% of people have a clout score that's considered high, right?
63 and above, yeah.
So, what is that other 95% doing wrong?
They're not engaging properly. That's all. Mm. But some of them may not care to have a high clout score, and some of them may not need it. You know, if you just are. Say if you're just a maid or something and you just use your social networks just to socialize with your friends and family, then you don't really need a high clout score. And these are the ones that have scores like in the 40s, you know, and that's fine. I mean, you know, if there's no purpose to having it, then don't do it. If, you know, unless you want to do it just to earn, so you can earn some perks as well. That's fine. But one thing that really, really angers me is that a lot of people misuse clout and use it for their ego. And it gives clout a bad name, and that just really, really bothers me.
Okay. Now, what about the connectivity of it all? I know, for instance, one of the things I'm a little leery of is connecting all my methods of social media only because each company has a different privacy policy.
I understand that.
And why, you know, I don't mind my Facebook being connected to clout, but I don't know if I want my Google Plus or other things all to be connected together.
That's completely up to you. Just I'm letting you know that, like, first of all, this is what you can do as well. If you have a page that you don't care about privacy and you are the most interactive, like if you have a Facebook page that's very interactive and privacy is not issued, use that one for clout. Use it, right? You have a Twitter account that you don't, you know, it's not private, use it. And if you, what you want to do is hook up the ones that are most interactive. And if the ones are the most interactive, chances are it's not going to be private.
The book is called The Secret to Having High Social Media Rankings. It's written by Miriam Schlossberg. People can check out your website, I understand, by going to miriamschlossberg.com. That's miriamschlossberg.com, and I'll put links in to my website. I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
And thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Miriam Schlossberg, author of The Secret to Having High Social Media Rankings. You can check out her website. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0180, and you'll find links to her site. You'll also find links to Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Have you ever heard about the two corporate CEOs who settled a potential legal dispute by arm wrestling? Here's the story. 20 years ago, two different airline companies discovered that they were using the same exact advertising slogan. It was quite a coincidence, but both executives knew that only one company could keep using it. They could have easily sued each other, as so many do these days, but they chose another option. The CEO of Southwest Airlines, who happens to be a lawyer, agreed to a public arm wrestling match with the chairman of the other company. So who won? Well, they both did. Southwest actually got to keep the slogan, but the event was used to raise money for local charities, too, so the companies solved their problem and earned a lot of respect in the process. Let's be fair, this is a great story because it shows how two leaders said no to a messy legal fight and turned a dispute into a lesson on creative problem solving. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
You're experiencing the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about identity theft, and of course there's indeed an idiot of the day, but first a couple more Stuff File news stories to bring to your attention. It may have worked 11 other times, but it looks like a Halifax, Nova Scotia man's luck at the pumps has finally run out. Halifax Regional Police arrested a 68-year-old man as he was filling up his vehicle at an Esso gas station. The man stands accused of gassing up and dashing away without paying the service station 11 times since October 24th. On that fall day, police responded to what they call a gas and go and said the culprit was caught on camera. They allege he did the same thing 10 more times until staff spotted him this past week and called police. The man was arrested without incident and no gas was stolen from the service station in this latest incident. Wayne Harvey Martel was expected to appear in Halifax Provincial Court on 11 counts each of theft under $5,000 and possession of stolen property under $5,000. Wow, talk about a creature of habit. And in Pensacola, Florida, Escambia County investigators arrested a man who robbed four businesses along Highway 29 to pay for his girlfriend's probation fees. Marquis Baldwin, age 22, of Pensacola, is charged with four counts of robbery with a firearm and six counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Deputies said Baldwin is responsible for at least four robberies along Highway 29 between November 30th and January 9th, including three Waffle House robberies and one at a Kangaroo gas station. Authorities say Baldwin would enter the businesses armed with a rifle and demand money from employees. Investigators said they recovered a pump-action BB gun Baldwin had used in the robberies, which he had committed to pay off his girlfriend's probation. The probation was found to have been paid in full after the January 9th robbery. Baldwin is being held in county jail on a $120,000 bond. Gee, will his girlfriend now have to return the favor? Just asking. Anyway, let's get to our last guest here on the Stuff File program for this week, shall we? College students are the favorite target of identity thieves. Why is that? Well, we're going to put that question to Bob Beyer, who is a certified forensic document examiner and the author of Identity Theft Prevention for the College Student. He joins us on the line from New York. Hi, Bob.
How are you, Peter?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, why is it that college students are such a hot target for identity thieves?
Well, I think college students really don't believe anything can happen to them, number one. And number two, I have actually heard from them when speaking with them. They said, Buyer, relax. I only got $25 in my account. They don't want me. And nothing could be further from the truth. They want your identity. When they get your identity, they can get hundreds of thousands of dollars by using your identity. And one of the reasons they do that is through social networking sites. College students put way too much information. Not all of your new friends, as they say they are actually new friends. Some of them are criminals looking for information they can exploit or sell. Here's a little scenario. When you share where and when you were born, anyone can get a copy of your birth certificate. With that birth certificate, they can obtain a duplicate Social Security card. With the Social Security card, they can obtain a driver's license. With the license, a passport. With the passport, anyone can travel anywhere and be you as much as they want.
And I guess one of the things about students is that it's literally virgin territory. We're talking about young people who don't have a credit history. They're just in the process of creating it themselves.
That is true. And another real bad thing that college students aren't the only ones, but college students are in the highest risk group of all people nationwide. But I don't know anybody age 18 to 28 or even higher who are not using a P2P program, a peer-to-peer, like BearShare, LimeWire, SoulSeek, anything to download free music and free games. And when they do that and they have it loaded on their computer, anyone, they don't even have to be in the computer, in the program. Anytime they're on the internet, anybody in the world has total access to every single thing on their computer, every document, every email, every password, every financial aid, financial statement, anything on the computer, total access. They must remove any P2P program on their computer, get rid of it, delete it, 3Deep, have it totally moved out. If you have to use it, put it on the thumb drive, so at least when you're downloading the music, it's not installed on your computer.
Okay. So that's a great piece of information right there. I mean, what we're saying basically is scaring college students and possibly their parents. So what other tips do you have so that college students can make themselves a little more safe from identity thieves?
Well, the other big one I think from college students, and they usually make fun of it and stuff, is passwords. A lot of them will use their actual college mascot as a password. And not just one or two, many will actually use the word password for their password, and they'll use this something to do with their school. You can never have a password that has anything to do with your name, your family, your pet, your school, any address that comes with you that they can find. A lot of them say, well, I can never remember it if I have something really good. Well, it's not true. You could use, for an example, capital I, capital W, the number 2, a dash, LB, 10, 10, LB, I want to lose 10 pounds. You can remember that. I want to have, with a plus sign, more beer. There's really many things that you could do that you will remember instantly and not forget that would be difficult. A password has to be at least 8 characters. It has to have uppercase, lowercase, numbers, and hopefully symbols. And don't, if you're going to use an exclamation mark, don't put it at the end, put it in the middle of the password.
Now, one of the things that people have to be concerned with, not just college kids, but everyone, are those fake emails that come from American Express or PayPal or your bank or other UPS or whatever the case may be, the notification emails. How do you know when they're fake?
First of all, the companies never need your information. They have it already. Any banking information, they already have it all. They're not going to request it. You never, ever, ever click on anything in the middle of an email. If FedEx is contacting, I just got a FedEx scam one this morning. If FedEx is contacting you, say, yeah, print the receipt right here, click on this button and print on it. They download all malware onto your computer, as spyware and everything else. You go and you call the FedEx. You call the credit card company. You call the bank. Did you need this? You never click on anything in an email.
My favorite one is they tell you that something you've ordered has been refused, so you have to call or you have to click on this to get the package delivered to you.
Yeah, there's so many scams out there, and they're brilliant. They're working on this all the time. They know what they're trying, all kinds of things. When something works, they run it out. They'll send 100,000 out. These people are brilliant. They have millions and millions of dollars to work with. They have nothing but the best and the high-tech people to do it. It's unbelievable, and they're winning the fight. It's like if you've ever remembered the California fires 15 years ago, young people won't know that, but if you think of the United States as a huge forest fire regarding identity theft, nobody can put it out, nobody can slow it down, nobody can do anything about it, and they're all trying. But identity theft is rampant, and it gets worse every year.
Now, we often hear, when it comes to online scams, we often hear of the famous ones that hail from other countries like Nigeria, for instance. When it comes to identity theft, is most of it homegrown identity thieves, or are we being targeted in North America by people beyond our shores?
You're being targeted, vast amount. There are the Nigerian population in the United States is 2%. The amount of identity theft in the United States from Nigeria is 22%. There's an awful lot of stuff that's coming out of China. There are actual brand new programs, not even downloading stuff for free. Brand new programs you buy in Best Buy that have spyware on them already. You need to have tremendous spyware and or malware and all of that stuff on your computer. You need to get it checked regularly.
Well, speaking of programs, what about things you should be wary about? Things like, for instance, registry cleaners and other utility software. And we see commercials for these. How do we know that these are trustworthy?
Yeah, I think that's a very difficult one. And I would never, ever, ever get anyone off of the Internet that's free. Unless you have a real high-tech person and he knows and he's researched. I am not a real high-tech person, so I have to go by what the high-tech people tell me.
Now, I mentioned in the introduction, when I mentioned your book, and we'll get to that in a second, that you are a forensic document a certified forensic document examiner. What exactly is that?
Basically, I testify in court regarding forgeries. Has a document been altered? Is this a genuine signature on this document? Is something fake? You know, any aspect of that. Is it the same ink? Was the sheet of paper removed, another one put in? All aspects of documents and of forgery.
Interesting. Now, that brings up another point. There was a time when documents were either typed or handwritten, but as we move ahead, as we are more technologically advanced, are documents easier or harder to forge than they used to be?
I think that they're much easier in terms of computer-generated. It is so easy to take somebody's signature off of one document and place it on another one that the person did not sign, submit it to the court system. Look, they signed this document. It's right here.
Your book, Identity Theft Prevention for the College Students, at what point did you decide I needed to write this book? And did you write it for the college student or their parent? Because sometimes their parent are the ones who get caught up in all of this because they have to deal with getting their kids out of their identity theft problems.
Yeah, I think I originally wrote it for the college student. I did nice big print. I had nice 13 pages of pictures in there. I made it so that there was no fat in it. It was just lean meat, so to speak, and it's just only 124 pages. So the college kid would actually pick it up and read it. But it is true that I think that parents, especially females, moms, would probably do this and tell the kids what to do, because a lot of times the kids got so much work that they're not going to be picking up, you know, just fun reading stuff to do on their own. And 80% of all books are sold to females, usually. So I guess moms would be the one that would really should take a look at this.
Well, speaking of genders, do identity thieves have a preference, male or female?
No, absolutely none.
None whatsoever.
Nope. Oh. It would go by senior citizens are one of the highest risk groups now. So they're going to go by groups of people, not whether the senior citizen is a male or the senior citizen is a female.
So they're going after students and senior citizens.
Yeah, those are the two biggies right now, because senior citizens, they're vulnerable because they are trustworthy and they're always they were brought up to help others. So somebody would call and say, oh, there's so many scams for the senior citizens. Incredible.
Right.
One thing I would like to say, though, a lot of times the college kids have debit cards. There are many debit cards that they can wipe out the entire account if your identity is stolen. On credit cards, they can't, because you can argue about it for the first 30 days. If you come up with it, you're not going to be charged. That would be one thing. Many credit cards right now have what they call RFID chips in them. Radio frequency identification, where anybody walking through the mall or past you with this little device in their pocket can download all of the information from your credit card.
So one has to be careful. I guess the best thing they can do is get your book. The book is called Identity Theft Prevention for the College Student. It's written by Bob Beyer. And Bob, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Oh, thanks. Everybody needs this information.
Bob Beyer, author of Identity Theft Prevention for the College Student. You can check out his website, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0180, and you'll find links to his site. You'll also find links to Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Nicole Golden allegedly tried to wheel out a shopping cart filled with nearly 100 stolen items worth $1,194 from a Walmart store in Athens, Georgia. The shopping cart contained 56 articles of clothing, 25 various household goods, two cell phones, and a child car seat. Golden was charged with felony theft. A Walmart loss prevention officer said that someone alerted him to a woman who was stuffing merchandise into totes, those large plastic containers with lids. The loss prevention officer watched Golden as she placed items in and around the totes that were in her shopping cart. Golden pushed the cart toward an exit where there was some construction and asked for permission to pass through the area. That's when the officer confronted Golden, who tried to get away by climbing a fence at the construction site, but the security employee prevented Golden's escape and called police. Okay. You know, shoplifting isn't bright to begin with, but why, oh why, would someone try to pilfer over 100 items at one time from a Walmart store? Well, one reason, and one reason only. She's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0180. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0180. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, God. I always screw it up.